Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
Your hair is hairin' today.
I just took it out of a bun.
That's nice, though.
I haven't done anything. I was like, I shouldn't be a little more better.
A little more better.
I was like, a little more what, Kara? A little more better.
More better.
I should be a little better. That's all I got. Just wondering about the state of my mental health.
I always wonder when I see those really nicely produced videos from people that are podcasting, they're like sitting cozy on a couch. How did you do that? How? Because I can't, clearly.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about this. Hey, welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara. And apparently my head is rather large in the frame, but here we are.
So our daughter has an expander in right now, and I don't remember if I told you this. Yes, this is why I was cackling the other morning. Folks, we're going to circle back around. We'll get to this. But Kara could hear me cackling mm-hmm. from a few rooms away
mm-hmm.
in the morning, which is apparently something I do often.
I said, Mike, why is Kim cackling? He's like, what? I said, Kim, she's cackling. Why? He's like, oh, she does that every morning.
There's funny things. And my brain is awake and I want to be entertained. But this one was courtesy of my daughter, because she got an expander put in about 3 weeks ago. I had to have an expander. My teeth were best described as being able to eat corn on the cob through a picket fence. And she has the same wonderful genetics when it comes to how her teeth are coming in. So she has a palate expander on the top right now, and she has to click it each night. And it literally changes the structure of your face. Well, she now has the teeniest gap in between her two front teeth, which is so funny because she's never had this before. Anyway, I had taken a picture of her and your daughter, and it was like a front-facing one. She's looking back through all the pictures and she's like, oh, my teeth look huge. Good thing braces are going to fix that. And I was like, well, honey, they'll be the same size. It's like, nah, not when I get braces. And I had this moment where I'm like, okay, dear, you think is gonna happen? Homegirl, I totally off subject, has nothing to do with this conversation at all, is very blonde. And she thought that when she had the actual braces put on that her teeth would shrink.
Lovely. God love her. Thank goodness she's cute.
She's really cute. And all I can think of is like, no, they're straining them out, but like your head, your entire head grows around them. Those babies ain't changing.
Yeah, that's why when they come in, they look absurdly large.
Right. Bless. Oh, so that was one morning of cackling. The other one was looking for bathing suits, and what Amazon decided my algorithm should actually be was, wow.
Yeah.
It was
patriotic Speedos.
There's one that I found that is a bald eagle right on the center package.
Why not?
Nobody wants that.
Why not?
So for those of you joining us just now, Kara got to come to Colorado. That's why we had our break, and it was lots of fun. And also, it was a working trip.
It was.
It was work.
I came home, and everyone was like, how was your trip? And I was like, it was fine. It was
a trip. Work.
It was not vacation. And they were like, oh, okay. I was like, yeah. And also they asked me that, the day after I got back. And the trip home was a lot more difficult than the trip there. Let's just say that. It wasn't hard. I was just wrecked because it was a working trip, because I came back from working and then I traveled with the baby and with my oldest. The whole family was supposed to go, but hurricane kind of threw the plan off, which was for the best because we lost power for several days, and someone was going to be taking care of the dog here at the house. And so it was kind of for the best that my husband and one of my sons were here to take care of things here. They ended up having to take care of like several things with the neighbors. So it worked out for the best. All that to say, before we move further into this, our home, everything is fine. We're far enough removed from hurricane damage that we didn't suffer any ill effects except loss of power for 5 days.
But it is impacting your community. I saw that you did the diaper and wipe drive, which was excellent. And it is ongoing.
Yes. Like,
these disaster efforts are, hopefully by the time this publishes, there's significant response and aid, but I'm not holding my breath.
I think most of the aid is coming from private organizations at this point and coming from citizens and people wanting to do good, which, you know, say what you will, but I remember, I feel like FEMA is still, it's still relatively new as a response. You know, if I think back to some of our bigger hurricanes that we have faced historically, and there wasn't FEMA. And so I'm, I guess, trying to view things through the lens of it's better than nothing, the response they're getting, and the fact that these communities are, people are really banding together. But I will tell you, if you watch any of the coverage, the footage from actual people who are there right now, it is hard to see. This is an area of the country that has never, ever had a hurricane hit like this. It's, hurricanes don't hit mountains usually. And so you're dealing with areas that it's full of hollers, which is like a little.
Please explain for those of us in the other parts of the country what a holler is.
A holler is a small town in a hollow, basically. But most of the towns in that area are named after creeks and rivers. And so you're looking at rivers that were 20 times their flood levels. So if that gives you any aspect of what it looks like, and just so many people who are still missing, I think the full impact won't be known for a long time because they are pulling people out of places left and right, dead and other and alive. So I so badly, I told my husband, we have four-wheelers and we have like a really good chainsaw and we have all this stuff. And I'm like, I want to get in the truck and I just want to go up there and I want to like just go help people. But, you know, I have a nursing baby, so it's not really super compatible. But yeah, raising money for diapers and wipes was something that I could do. Our neighbor has family in the Asheville area. And so she's taking stuff up there to their church and they're actually distributing things to people who are in need. And so it's just, that's the most I can do right now. And I wish I could do more. And it hurts me, hurts my feelings, hurts my heart. And I just couldn't imagine having little people in that.
Well, and it's really hard, as I was getting the updates through you and through, you know, your neighborhood and what Joe was sending. It's hard for me as somebody who has lived in Colorado pretty much my whole life to wrap my head around hurricane damage. Yeah. Probably the same way that it would be difficult for you to wrap your head around when we have wildfires and like severe fires or like massive blizzards or something. It's different because you want to say, oh, well, why couldn't they get out? You know, we hear about, there's like a northern Texas ice storm and we're like, what the heck? You've got an inch of snow, dude. But it's when these communities aren't set up to support that. They aren't prepared in that way because it doesn't happen there all the time. And I just keep thinking of all of the different ways that responses to natural disasters are understood by the people in those communities. It's kind of the same way that people respond to crimes. You know, like, is this something that's normal? Are we prepared? Are we set up to support these things? And most oftentimes you're not, especially if you're friends and family. You don't live or breathe or have this constantly. So you might not be prepared. You might not know what to do. And finding those resources is an act of people helping people. You can't necessarily rely on an organization at all times. I didn't expect it to be this way, but this may be one of those where we're like, hey, if you've got $10, let's split that 5 and 5. Okay. And we're going to link some things for you to help. Just whatever you can do, if you are feeling the same way where, hey, I want to help, I want to do something. Something is always better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you feel like you'd like to be involved in a way that maybe isn't the standard Red Cross sort of donation, here's a couple that may be worth looking out. The first one is Convoy of Hope. I know the people who actually work with this, they load up semis, they have a ton of donations, and they are that first response. They are going into the areas and the communities that are affected by Hurricane Helene. And if you feel like giving, you know, $5, $10, whatever it might be, they are actually providing firsthand aid to those folks that are being impacted right now. So we'll put all of these links in our show notes as well.
Yeah. And then a couple of my other favorites that I've seen that are actually boots on the ground doing great work, Mountain Mule Packer Ranch. So they have pack mules, and they are loading up these pack mules, and they are hiking, they are packing things into people and rescuing people, because a lot of these areas you can't even get ATVs into. So pack mules and horses are perfect. They can step over trees and things like that. They can go through small areas. So Mountain Mule Packer Ranch. Another one is Cajun Army. They're fantastic. They are doing awesome things. You can look up any of these on social media. They all have social media. And then one of the diaper companies that I actually tried diapers from that I liked, I ended up not having a partnership with, but Every Life, they do diapers for need. So they are focused on ending diaper need. So you can purchase diapers. So that's another way, if you don't want to give directly, if you want to give in a different way, then you can purchase diapers from them, and they will actually give diapers to people in need. They're obviously donating a lot of stuff, but they are specifically funding those need diapers to that area.
Feel free to do your own research. These are just the ones that we have found and would like to suggest, but always look into those on your own if you'd like. And if you all have other organizations that you know are doing really good work, feel free to post them, send them our way. Definitely talk about it in the Patreon.
Maybe we can just, for this episode, just go to, if you have great resources, you can go to this episode's post on social media and you can post those in the comments. That way people can pull them up. I mean, there's so many organizations and there's churches. And the one thing that really inspires me is seeing how people come together to support people. It's been really beautiful. In the absence of, you know, it's a complex situation this close to an election. It's complex how the responses are being handled. And I think we can kind of all agree at this point that I don't know many people who don't agree that the media is so weird right now. Like, weird is the nicest thing I could say. You can look at headlines from various media sources and they are going to be dramatically different. So the media coverage and what's happening, it's questionable, but just do your own research. As always, those are a few things that I've found that have been pretty amazing and pretty inspirational. And honestly, I'm like, I want to get on my horse and I just want to go down there and I just want to go through the mountains. But I did want to give just a tad bit of context for people who may not understand how this happened. How did this area get so flooded? A little bit of context. First of all, a hurricane is basically just a gigantic, for some of our listeners I know are in other countries and things like that, may not be super familiar. So a hurricane's just like a 100-mile storm. It does technically have an eye, but it's just a really big storm. And so these areas in the mountains, they already had ground that was saturated with water. So there was a lot of rain leading up to that point. So everything was already all basically at flood level before the hurricane hit. And then the hurricane came in and it went on a path that hurricanes never go on. And then it got over the western North Carolina, eastern Tennessee area, and it stopped and it stalled there. And it dumped water for like a day on that area. So you are looking at a situation where no one expects a hurricane to do that. Everyone was very unprepared. It's unprecedented. And then you have to understand that when you're dealing with all of this saturated ground and then rivers and creeks and streams and everything in that area, mudslides and things like that are happening in seconds.
That's the part that, like, I have a hard time. I know that it happens, but the idea of a mudslide and what that actually is just blows my mind.
Yeah, there's been so, I mean, it's an avalanche of mud. And so I've seen some pretty awful videos. And then you're looking at lakes like Lake Lure, where the entire lake is filled with trees and boats and houses. And it's pretty devastating. So, you know, I think if you have a little bit of margin and you're able to donate to any of those sources, then, you know, do what your heart compels you to do. But I can tell you it's a heartbreaking situation. And I read a story yesterday, I think, of a woman who gave birth during it in her home by herself. She was stranded. And they just rescued her and her 6-day-old baby, and her boyfriend is missing. And so, like, there are so many stories like this. And you know that there's going to be stories like this because people give birth every day. And there's, you know, people who are losing their children in mudslides, and children that are watching homes, like their neighbors' homes, slide down the river. And so we're looking at a mass trauma response. And so I don't want to go too far into it, but there's information out there if you want to find out more about it. I'm realizing how empathetic I actually am when I'm consuming these things, and how much I have shut down my empathy to survive thus far in my life. And I'm having a hard time with it.
Well, you can't turn away. It's there and happening. And I think for those of you who are experiencing these impacts, and it may not make sense to you, even if you aren't in the middle of that storm damage, folks, that's how vicarious trauma can happen. It can be passed just from consuming that much news, that much media about that same thing, and seeing and witnessing. We are not meant to witness so much suffering outside of our own communities. And then when we do, it's definitely a trauma response. We are sitting in the middle of really, really bad air quality right now because of wildfires. And so when I think of just the amount of water that's there, again, like this isn't making sense in my brain. I'm watching the next hurricane getting ready to hit Florida.
That is still flooded.
You're right. It is still saturated, still tons and tons of precipitation there. And they're about to be hounded by yet another hurricane. And this one in particular is hard for me to understand because Mike and I are supposed to be flying into Miami. And I'm like, does the runway still exist? Is that how this works? I have no idea. Is it like a blizzard here in Colorado where, hey, everything's shut down and don't worry, we'll kick it in 4-wheel drive and be there tomorrow and it's fine? Like, I don't know. I have nothing to base this off of.
Pretty much. I would say, like, of all the places that you're flying into Florida, it's kind of the one that I would pick. Like, the reason I rescheduled my flights to Colorado is because I was flying through Atlanta and flying directly through the hurricane. And I was like, I don't think I want to fly through a hurricane. But Florida, they're prepared. they know what's up. So I think you'll be okay.
Probably. Well, and hindsight. Okay, so let's circle back. Mm-hmm. Look at us. This has sort of been one big 20-minute segue.
Yeah.
You came out to Colorado.
I did.
So we were working this whole time. And I realized on Monday, so you came into my room after you guys got back from going to the bakery and in Old Town Fort Collins. And I was getting ready to go to a meeting. And we're sitting there chatting because baby is sleeping finally. And I realized that was the first time that we had actually been able to talk that we weren't being recorded. There's no one screaming in our ear. We aren't on a deadline for something. And I was like, damn, this has not been even sort of recharging. Our kids, by the end of this, were melting down.
They were so done.
They were so done. By the way,
my son that came with me, I feel like today is the first day that he has been somewhat normal. It's taken him days to recover.
It took the kids a little while because no one had alone time. Uh-huh. And I think all of us, kids included, all really value that. I know my kids are good at, like, I need to decompress. I need some alone time. And no one had any of it. On top of that, you also have grade school level children that have to be in the house because all of the parents are working. We were filming for a documentary, which we can now tell you is very exciting. But they had to be silent during this because there's an entire documentary crew at my home filming, not in one room, but multiple places in the house. And
also, they were kind of like primary caregivers for the baby.
Right.
A lot.
Right.
Because Kim and I were both being recorded at the same time.
Yep. And when one of us was being recorded on our own, the other was either holding a baby or telling children, shh, shh.
Yeah.
Have as much screen time as you want. Just don't make any noise. It was hard for Mike. Mike was at his wit's end at the end. If I had to do it again, I would say one day of recording in my space is probably the cap. But yeah, we had to have it done in 2 days because Kara was here. Our friend Jen, who you're going to hear from later on this season, was also here filming. There were four documentary crew. Documentarians? Is that the word? Documentarians? That sure. Were here as well. They were wonderful. It mm-hmm. is literally just, that is a cause. Everybody in on top of each other and the silence part. It was just like, woof. And then when the kids went to school, they're also not alone. So Kara took the baby and her son to Old Town Fort Collins for a lovely little morning on Monday morning. And it was the first time I was in the house alone. Tell them what you walked back into.
I was just like, I know Kim has reset her home because it was like there were candles on, the house had been straightened up, everything had been put in its place to include like my mic had been packed up in my mic box and music was on. And I was like, this is exactly the way I would have responded once everyone's out of my home. Get this crap back in order because it restores my sanity. But I really felt like, you know, my son was a real trooper. This is, you know, my 10-year-old and he was like taking care of his sister for the most part. And I was like, you need a little reward. So we found an amazing, lovely little gluten-free bakery in Colorado Springs.
Fort Collins.
I say that every single time.
Close.
I know. Every single time I'm like, Fort Collins. They both have season them, whatever.
You got haulers, we got high country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So found a cute little bakery in Fort Collins and the best freaking toy store I've ever been to. Really unique stuff. And so had just a little bit of like us time and made it a little special for him, which is something that I think we've talked about here before that I love to do whenever I travel for work is find something that I like to do and try to insert some joy and something kind of that fits me into those trips. So that kind of made things better, brought back some gluten-free goodies for his brother, which I thought was sweet. He was like, I want to take one to my brother. I was like, okay, pick something for him. So yeah, that was nice to have that kind of little reset moment, which was what we needed. And you needed to reset your house.
Yep. Same way that we talk about like needing to go and drool on ourselves afterwards. Not only are we recording and in this space and having to manage kids and try to feed them on a semi-normal schedule, but we're also talking about really traumatic stuff over and over while making sure that, you know, our battery packs are charged and that cards and things are rolling. And it's just a lot mentally, I think. And I feel like I've got pretty good stamina for that typically. But when it was in my home, in my space.
And your kids are there, it's difficult.
Yeah. So we need an actual vacation, not just a trip at some point. And it's also really different when we travel somewhere and it's just us without kids. So
for sure, I have been thoroughly inundated into what it means to travel with a baby. I've never flown with a baby until this. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I was so stressed. You didn't know that?
No, that's just your normal state of being. All right. This is all making way more sense. Kara is freaking out about the car seats, which I get. Totally get. We had borrowed one from a friend. I had to send the expiration date ahead of time and like test it. I went so far as to take it to my local fire department and have the firefighters who are trained. It's like a 40-hour certification. Yeah. do this. And they were having trouble even strapping it in. They're like, why won't this thing go? And we were probably there for like 30 minutes on my way down to the airport to make sure that this thing is put in the right way, because guess what? It's been a hot minute since I had kids in car seats.
Well, and every single car seat's different. And right. I will say, I know for me, like, even with my biggest kid, I am very, very stringent on the rules for car seats and where they sit and what's safe and when, because there's not a lot you can control when it comes to your children's safety. But that is one thing that I can be absolute crazy about, my level of control, and make sure they are as safe as possible. Because if something happens to them, God forbid, and I didn't do that, I know I would, I don't know how I would get through it. So, yeah, Kim picked me up at the airport and I was like, I got to check the seat before I put my baby in it. And it was, I was like, I don't know if this is right. And I was like, I don't know how to do it better. So we're just going to roll with it. Kim's like, they're really certified. I was like, yeah, but I see the way the people that are here, like, I know the people who also went through those courses, and I saw them install car seats. And then I learned more about car seats, and I was like, they didn't know what they were doing. So I'm not going to say my levels are higher.
I'm telling you this is safe. No, it's not. That was totally
like, I'm like, I don't think so. Like, it's not supposed to move that much. I've read far too much about internal decapitation. Whatever, my baby survived. Yeah. See, it's.
Nope. See,
I'm weird about it. I am not even gonna, I make zero apologies. And everyone that knows me knows that you're not taking my kid if they're not in the right seat. And like one of our family friends was like, oh yeah, they can, the kids can go. We'll just double buckle. And I was like,
damn, do what? That is a page out of my childhood. Double buckle. Like,
double buckle. What is it? That you think that that's going to do in an accident?
You die together.
I was like, that ain't going to do nothing. You will not double nothing, my kids. I will drive them to where they need to go. You're not double buckling.
Oh my God, I forgot about the double buckle.
Yeah, I was like, absolutely not. They're like, well, so-and-so rides in the front car seat. I was like, well, their parents was, I love them.
Anyway. Oh my God, can I just tell you, after I dropped you guys off, we left at like 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning. I drop them off 6, Denver International, which is a huge hub right in the middle of the United States for those who are not from here.
And also nowhere.
Right. The freaking airport is close to absolutely nothing. But on the way out, I stopped and I got the kids a dozen donuts from Dunkin' Donuts. And I came home and I was like, here you go, children, gluten and food dye.
Welcome. Like, what can you not eat? And I was like, it's just gluten and food dye. She was like, I have absolutely no idea what that's in. And I was like, okay, I'll take care of it.
I know. Well, I was going to go shopping ahead of time. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to wait till you get here and let you pick it out. Because
fair enough.
Like, yeah. I feed my children. Hamburger helper? Hamburger help me. Come on.
I mean, it's fine. If you can't, if you don't know, you don't know. That's okay. I don't expect anyone else to hold themselves to my standards. Let's just say that.
Like, I know that Takis are probably bad for them, right?
And so. They definitely have food dye in them.
Well, blue is not a naturally occurring color in food typically.
Or fluorescent red.
Fluorescent red. You mean this Mountain Dew is not all natural?
Weird. I'm not even going to get on that soapbox. That's a whole different topic for a whole different podcast. But yes. So did we actually say what the documentary is about? Are we saying
not?
It?
Okay. But let's also point out, this was a work trip. Guess how much content we made, everyone?
None, because we were working. Okay. But we did film. We do have like some B-roll for the podcast. That's about it. We took a photo together with the documentary crew that I hate because I look like a potato. I hate it. I hate the photo so much. And it's not because I'm bullying myself. It is a very unflattering photo.
We were tired.
It is not what I look like. I saw the photo and I was like, I don't look like that. So I hate that photo, but it's already on the line. So there it is. And then we took a picture to the airport and I haven't seen that one. I'm sure.
I sent it in the massive iCloud
link. I haven't gotten through 111 files yet. Sorry.
I wasn't going to go through and like pull them. I was just like, you know what?
I started trying to look at it and I was like, it was like this morning and then the baby woke up.
So mostly of your baby. Let's be real.
Because she's perfect. But we were working on a documentary that's about ethical true crime.
Yes.
So right all up in our alley.
Back at the beginning of the year, a couple of students had reached out to me because they had been listening to the podcast and they were part of the, so CU has a Denver campus where they do film studies. And they had reached out because they were really inspired by this idea of ethical true crime creation. I see most of my emails, not actually. So for this one to hit at the time when I could actually respond to it and follow up was like, woo, really beating the statistics here for what's normal for me. I got to meet with them though. They were wonderful. They wanted to soak up and learn as much as they possibly could. And so they've ended up putting together like a very short 10-minute version for their documentary class. That was just their final project. We couldn't get Kara to participate because she was like birthing or something. But they were able to have a pretty well-rounded view of what true crime looks like as the industry and, you know, what doing it ethically can look like. So I had taken them with me. Well, they came to my house and recorded, and then they went with me when I testified down at the Colorado legislature in the last session. And so they were getting an idea of what all this stuff looks like. Then their peers and professors got to vote on these documentaries and which one should move forward. And they are now part of a year-long class that is advanced documentary making. So they got like a budget and a lot of support from the university. And so they are turning this into a full-blown documentary that they are going to then submit to, what are they called? I'm showing my not film side. Festivals. Oh, like film festivals. Yes. And we'll do screenings. So it's tapping into a lot of the things that, yes, this is the ethical true crime side, but this is what it should look like. And they are interviewing a ton of different people. I'm working with them on the side just for, hey, this is how we should, you know, do some of the development pieces. But man, they are off and running and I am able to just answer questions when they need it. And it has been a really, really fun experience so far. So this was a lot of planning to get Kara here, our friend Jen, who you're going to hear more of, survivor and friend of ours. And so we were all able to get together. And this was actually the first time that Kara and I have recorded an episode in person together, which yeah. I was like, that's weird.
Like, how do we do this? We don't know how to film. How do we film this for content?
We were not very good at that.
Unprepared.
We're going to redo that part, but
it was a lot of fun and reminded me a lot. The conversations that we were having reminded me of why I don't consume true crime often. So we had multiple conversations through the weekend about, you know, various true crime documentaries and things like that. And when I came home, I was talking to my husband about some of the things and I was like, yeah, you know, he said, oh, you know, one of the things I was watching when I was gone was this documentary is a true crime story. And he's like, have you seen it? And I was like, I generally don't consume these things for a lot of reasons, but one of them is because I don't know if they're done ethically or not. I can't attest to it. And so I just can't put my eyeballs on it.
Yeah.
But one of the documentaries that you said you had watched that was well done was the one about Lacey Peterson.
Yes.
And we had talked about it previously. And I was like, why don't I know a lot about that case? Oh, because it happened in 2002.
That was literally the first thing I thought of when I saw the timing. I was like, oh, I know something else happening at the same time. Right.
And so we watched that as well as the one about a friend of mine, Denise Huskins. They're both on Netflix. I think it's American Nightmare.
It is.
It is? Okay.
Yeah.
Which I know she was a part of. And so my husband and I, our two older kiddos, spent the night with some friends, and they went pretty early in the morning this weekend. And so we were faced with a day with just the baby. And what shall we do with ourselves? Well, we watched the Lacey Peterson documentary and we watched American Nightmare. And I honestly have not stopped thinking about those two cases since I watched them. That was days ago. And I'm like, how do people consume this all the time?
Or like, yeah, if you're legitimately binging it, how?
I don't understand. And maybe it's because I'm just so inundated with tragedy right now. And that was just like tragedy on top of tragedy. I'm just like, I don't know how people do this. I literally have not stopped thinking about Lacey Peterson
now
and about Denise Huskins.
Is part of that, though, because the two that you watched were done correctly, they were done well, and you were able to sort of shut your brain off and consume it as if it not entertainment, but you weren't constantly thinking about, is this ethical? Is this ethical?
Well, that's a big part of the reason why I don't consume it unless I know. And so I'm not going to say this is my first real interaction with true crime, but it kind of is, because I just don't consume it. So with the exception of like watching things that I know my friend are about my friends that I know that they have said are okay, or watching America's Most Wanted when I was a kid.
Rescue 911. Did you watch Rescue? Do you remember that?
No, it's like Unsolved Mysteries, Cops, and America's Most Wanted. That was it, really. So aside from that, I can't even tell you the last true crime thing that I watched or listened to. And so I didn't really know the details of Lacey Peterson because I didn't consume it then. And I didn't know a lot of the details of Denise's case because I was part of a show that she was also on, and I wasn't there whenever she was telling her story. And it was just like a brief overview. So I didn't know all of the details. And so just kind of watching those things, I was like, I mean, I haven't stopped thinking about it.
I know. Well, and because your friendship is not contingent upon the details of what happened to her, you don't have to know those things to know that, like, oh, we get each other on a different level.
Right.
But I'm the same way. And I also won't look up anything that's historical, documentary. Like, we watched stuff on Waco. I won't look up anything on purpose. Like, I'm an IMDb junkie, and it takes all of my willpower to not Wikipedia the rest of the story. I want to see how it's presented. And that is really, really hard. So for me to watch those, I'm experiencing the, like, basically what the filmmaker wants you to, with that suspense side of things. And I think maybe that's what people really like. And being on the other side then and seeing how they're put together, and sometimes it's like, that was just introduced in the third act. That's something they knew up front in the investigation. And so it's always interesting to see how it's reworked and made into this media ready package.
And when you have the multi-episode docuseries, and like, you see how they get people to keep watching, it's watching it from a different perspective. It's interesting, I will say. So I just had to share that because I thought it was appropriate, because we talk so much about true crime content, obviously, and how we don't consume a lot of it. And when we were talking to Jen, and you were like, well, have you seen her episode, their episode? And I was like, no, but if you send it to me, I will. I'm like, sorry. I specifically try not to consume anything about our guests specifically before they're on, because I don't want to know what the media says. I want to know what they say.
Right.
So.
Same. We usually are pretty good about that. We'll go off of like what they've told us or what we know about them from each other, and just very high level overview. But generally it's, what are we going to learn? What do they want to talk about? It isn't the story itself. So I get, though, why it stuck with you in that way. And I find it interesting, after being asked so many questions in so many different ways. Like, it was very meta. We're doing a documentary about our podcast, and
which is about true crime.
But is it? I guess that's my big question that I'm walking away with now is, you know, we were talking about, here's all the things that went into it. And those of you who have been along for this whole ride know that was a lot of conversation and thoughts that we put into, you know, even the name, what we chose for the logo, the way that we center our episodes. And we're talking about it as true crime industry, but is it? No. Because we had a hard time putting that into, like, when you add your podcast. It's a little Chicago coming out. When you add your podcast to Apple, for instance, you have to pick what categories it goes under. And we chose true crime because obvious reasons. But then it's like, but we're not doing true crime stories. Is it society and culture? But no, we have this crime element. Is it health and wellness? Well, no, we don't have those kind of credentials. And so it's this weird blending of all the things. So I would be interested to see if you had to make up your own genre for this, what would it be?
If lifestyle. It wasn't true crime? Huh? Lifestyle.
I know, but like, I hope this isn't a freaking lifestyle. Not one that we all chose, but
the reason I say that is because I often have to figure out where I fit as a influencer. And, you know, filling out various forms or whatever about that. And I'm like, lifestyle? That's like the best thing because it's just kind of like at life. It's life, right? Like, we're more so talking about difficult things, which everybody goes through. And how do you get through it? And like, what is life like? So anyway, that's kind of been, you know, what we've been marbling around in our brains.
I just think it's interesting. So let us know what you would label us as if you had to pigeonhole us in that way. But it did make for some interesting conversations and interviews.
For sure.
I think it could end up being really cool, especially with how many people they are now bringing in to interview and have these different perspectives, which is something, of course, we encourage. We are not the end all be all. We are two chicks with microphones, and that's the only experience that you're going to get from us. So you have to broaden your worldview and who you're talking to. And, you know, we can't represent every single community, nor should we. So go out there and get that information.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So switching gears a little bit, we have a couple of other topics that we want to hit before our allotted time is up here. So go ahead, Kimberly.
Okay. So I have a consulting business, have for a while. It's basically when I do speeches or go in and answer questions, or I am working in an expert capacity, it's as a consultant, which is such a funny word. I think that like it just gets thrown into this bucket, but I was recently hired on as part of my consulting work to do development for our local sex assault advocacy centers. Oh, I am now the development consultant for SAVA here in Northern Colorado, which I am when we say get involved and do things, we mean locally, because the best way that you can make the biggest impact is by volunteering and helping out with your local organizations. That's not something that we can seek out or find for you. It's a Google search. Look within your county, within your town, find out where those resources are and ask how you can help. Most of them will offer trainings for victim advocacy. If you're going to man like a hotline, or say you're in there once a week and your job is to fold pamphlets or put together baggies, like they all always need help. And I'm just really excited to get to help in this capacity. And I've done trainings for them in the past. I was a keynote speaker for their big annual event in 2018, I want to say. Yeah, 18. And it's called the SAVA Soiree. It's black tie optional. So I will be doing a little rent the runway action. And this is their biggest annual fundraiser. You've heard me talk about it before, but that VOCA funding is impacting victim advocacy centers across the entire country. Those programs are being slashed. And so now, more than ever, fundraising is of crucial importance. And that does not leave out SAVA as well. So I'm really hoping to bring in some of those fundraising efforts and the ability just to support the survivors that are right here in my own community. And so I've been pouring a ton of time and energy into that. And I'm also really excited because I get to work with my friend Allison, who is now their executive director. So you'll remember Allison.
You guys might remember.
You may remember.
On the podcast.
Yes. So she was on and talked when she was in her capacity at EVA and about the Start by Believing program. And now she's been hired on as the executive director for SAVA. And I could not be more thrilled. So this has been a really fun couple of weeks. It's been really stressful leading up to this. So if you're in the Northern Colorado area and you want to come, I'm going to put the link in the show notes. You can get individual tickets. It's really fun. There's going to be a nice band and you can get dressy if you want to. You don't have to. Live auction, silent auction, just like, it's so much fun and it's for a good cause. So I'll put that link in there. And if you're not local, but you would like to support the efforts, you can follow the same link and there's donation options as well. So we are always, they're putting out all kinds of different resources. So it's not just, you know, a hotline. It's also the prevention education. There's resources for school districts. It's working with the crime victims one-on-one. There's counseling being offered. There's all kinds of different things that this organization does. And I'm just really honored to get to be a small part of it. So that's what I've been doing.
Which also I will say is a highlight to what Kim already mentioned. Whenever people ask, you know, how can I get involved? What can I do? Most local advocacy centers do offer a lot of the things that Kim just mentioned. So if you are local and you want to support Kim's organization, SAVA, that she's involved with, then that's awesome. But also, like, look for ones in your community, like she said, to get involved with. That's always when people are like, how can I help? What can I do? I'm like, look in your community, because that's always a great place to start.
Well, and we get a lot of questions about, like, I want to start speaking. I want to share my experience.
Yeah.
That's the most important place to start, because they need to know how you were responded to in your own communities. It doesn't have to be you standing up with a PowerPoint and giving a speech. It can be so much as sitting around talking to peer advocates. You know, I say that all the time. That was my first experience with quote unquote speaking, was talking to my peer advocates at my college just about my experience the semester prior. And then I let them ask questions. And if they asked me something I wasn't comfortable with, I knew that it was something I needed to work on in therapy. And I say that because a lot of people want to start helping before they're at a point where they are healed. And it's a good place to kind of test those waters and figure it out with folks who are local to you. So that's my big piece of advice. If you want to get involved and you want to do something or start in this world, even if it's just part-time, it's something that you want to volunteer for. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I've had great working partnerships with a lot of my local organizations as well. Luckily, partnerships that I was able to form when I was working in law enforcement, and they're always looking for people to help. So I've done a lot with our local organizations here as well. So great resource.
Also, we are halfway through Domestic Violence Awareness Month. That is all the month of October. You're going to hear from a guest next week who has a domestic violence story that is incredibly inspiring and just gut-wrenching at the same time. So we're looking forward to bringing you her story, her platform, her message this month. And it's not just a month. It's all year round, and it's every aspect of life for these survivors.
So I know that we have a lot of listeners who have disclosed to myself or Kim or us on the podcast account that they are survivors of domestic violence. And so our hearts are just with you, and we just want to let you know that, hey, we see you and we salute you and your bravery and the strength that it takes to survive that this month, especially, but really always. We know how hard and how complex that is, and we're freaking proud of you, okay?
Hell yeah, we are. So with that, you may notice that I am probably not on social a whole lot this week. It's because I'm not in the country.
Yeah, and I am, who knows where I am on social media. With the aforementioned local tragedy, I am really struggling with finding purpose in social media, which I've talked about on my social media, but finding purpose in social media, which feels shallow when there's a lot heavier things going on. So I'm just really trying to find purpose in that. So I'll see you when I can. I'm doing my best to try to do the podcast social media as well. But I am in the trenches of the homeschool curriculum currently and have a baby. So, you know, we're doing our best. But Kim is going to go on a lovely little trip. And I am here in South Carolina.
Hey, last time you went out of the country, I was here alone too. So
I know.
I just sat here like, hello. I will be back about the time that this airs, though. So thank you so much for joining us, everyone. And as always, make sure that you're checking out our Patreon. We're most active there. Would love to interact with you, answer our questions. And if you have even $5 to spare, please check out those show notes. Check the nonprofits and the organizations we have listed there that are helping not just with hurricane relief, but for survivors in our local communities as well. So until next week, we'll see you soon.
Love you, mean it.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain. If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show. To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com. Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Audacity!